All right, all you movie junkies, it is time for the SLS Cast with your hosts, Matt and Tim.
And welcome, one and all, to episode 22 even of the SLS Cast. Because it's an even number, and that's about the only thing I know about math.
You sound awake, sir.
I'm doing what I can. Very excited, final week of the semester for me, so I've got one troubling final left. I've got A's everywhere else, so I'm good to go. The way that the class is weighted, even though I'm going into the final with an A, to maintain my A, I have to get an A on this final, and there's going to be some content on this music final that I'm not 100% on, so I'm kind of sweating it a little bit.
Well, I'm just glad we don't have to do the episode at 5:30 in the morning my time.
Yes, this must be, this is back to normal scheduled time, which is good. I think that, and it's even our regular day. I'm
that is
quite
true,
frankly impressed here.
Yeah, and now I'm really hoping whenever I go through and edit the show, I don't have to like add the extra boost to our volume, so we actually sound like we're coherent people.
And this time you actually won't have to do the audio coffee inject. Hey, wake us up a little bit. Yeah. So, yeah. Cool. Well, so that's my world right now. Everything's pretty honky-dory. Just wrapping up school. What's going on with you, sir?
Not much. Just been working and editing and writing. The same-o, same-o.
Very cool.
Not,
looking forward to
much eating.
Doing some writing with you.
I know, right? Soon. Yeah, we got to get back on that.
Yeah, I know. It's only been like a month and a half.
Yeah, I had some Chipotle today, and that was a bad idea.
It doesn't encourage writing, does it?
No, not at all. It discourages your entire life. In fact, right before you Skype called me, we were about to record, I was considering shooting myself in the face because of that burrito, that steak burrito I had.
So not only does it disrupt your writing flow, it disrupts like colon flow and all that stuff.
It does. It not only does it just suck up everything that has inside of you, but it spits it all out like 5 hours after you eat it. And I will say this to you people, do not get that mild sauce, that green looking sludge. No, it's not. That's the medium sauce, I guess, because that's what it looks like. That's the only thing that comes out of you at the end. That's the only thing. It breaks down every morsel.
That's good to know. I gotta say, we have here. Well, of course, you know, here in the Houston area, we have both Chipotle and Freebirds.
Mm-hmm.
And I have always preferred Freebirds to Chipotle, so that's I don't ever go to Chipotle, so you won't have to worry about me going there. Truth be told, I haven't gone to Freebirds in a long time either, but I just want to let you know I am heeding your advice, sir, heeding your word.
Good. I'm glad I know that. I can sleep better now.
Yes.
Now knowing that one person that I know, a friend of mine, will not have to go through the pain and suffering that... thing with Chipotle, one more thing before we move on, is that Chipotle's is one of those places where you walk by and whenever you're really hungry and you're like, well, we can go to the Olive Garden, we can go to Carrabba's, go to TGI Fridays, or we can go to Chipotle, and immediately just a warning sign in your head goes, no, stop it right there. Remember last time? Do you remember what happened to you last time? But no, you disregard that warning sign from your brain, and you just go in and you order your barbacoa burrito or whatever. And then you regret it again. Then you realize, oh, I should have listened to myself. There's a reason why I have not set foot in a Chipotle in over 2 years.
And the reason is the medium sauce.
Among other things.
Yeah. All right, well, now that we have visions of sugar plums dancing in our heads, as it were.
I wish.
Shall we start with the news?
Yes!
All right, then, it's time, people. Time for the news!
See, that was much better this time. You're doing better at this this little music cue thing.
Heralding. I'm trying to do the herald that you know. Except you've got the actual bugle sound much better than I do.
Oh, do I?
Well, that was your cue to try and do a bugle sound. There you go. All right. So news.
And that wasn't my mouth. That was the Chipotle talking.
All right. Well, I've got some news here, and not a whole lot of news, but some easy stuff. Let's see. Kelsey Grammer, as it turns out, is going to be moving on to another franchise here. As we all know, in the world of science fiction, superheroes, and what have you, he was Beast in X-Men The Last Stand, or Dr. Hank McCoy. He is now moving along, after leaving his most recent television show, Boss. He's now moving on to Transformers 4. So this is courtesy of MSN Entertainment, the Parallel Universe, so hat tip to them. I love the little byline here. It says, Kelsey Grammer joins Transformers 4, but will he get his own toy? That's the question. According to Deadline, Grammer will play the main human villain in the movie, a counterintelligence agent named Harold Attinger. Or Attinger. Probably Attinger. We don't know what he'll be up to, but we'd bet cold hard cash that it involves the Autobots and the Decepticons and some ancient thingy and lots of explosions, destruction, and noise. This is a Michael Bay film, after all. So, I'm looking forward to this now. I'm a big Kelsey Grammer fan. And I am happy to admit that I have been watching him since season 2 of Cheers. Watched all of Cheers, watched all of Frasier. I, however, have been horrible and I never did catch Boss. So, I'm looking forward to checking that out to see how that goes.
That show didn't make it, did it?
I do know that the show is over. It only lasted 2 seasons, maybe 3. But even still, I really do want to catch that show and see how he did. Because he definitely was playing a bad guy in Boss.
Well, let's hope he'll be able to stick with his Transformers thing. But something tells me he won't be around for Transformers 5.
Probably not. And that actually kind of leads into one of the few things, actually probably really the only thing I was disappointed about with Iron Man 3. And I know we're going to be talking about it later, so I'm not going to go in too much detail. I just really wish they'd have brought back the evil corporate villain from Iron Man 2 instead of bringing in a new one. But, you know, it's a minor thing for me. So. Next item up for bid. Bill and Ted 3 script is, quote, looking good, says Keanu Reeves. This here is from WoW247, and this is a UK website. This is essentially all it really says. I just want to make sure that everybody knows that the universe is being moved forward here. Essentially, Reeves was talking to We Got This Covered, and he said, quote, I haven't seen a full script for it yet, but it's coming along. I've seen bits and pieces of a script, and it looks good, end quote. So Alex Winter is also, they say that he has previously said that the plot may involve the pair of rock-loving slackers time traveling to the prehistoric era. So they even have gone so far in this article to suggest that Bogus Journey co-star William Sadler could reprise his role as the Grim Reaper. If he does, I think this is going to be a fantastic movie. I thought that he made the sequel happen.
Yeah, man. I think this would be totally cool.
I really do. I think that,
especially if you have like the Harold and Kumar movies. I mean, why not do the original? I mean, they weren't necessarily stoners, Bill and Ted. I mean, they very well should have been. But, you know, they were like the original adventure movie bros, I guess.
Exactly. And that's the whole thing, is that I think that because you're bringing the original people back, I think that there's plenty of room here to expand the universe and have fun with it and incorporate their age. And I really think that you could get a really kick-ass Clerks vibe where...
I have to say this real quick. What you just said, that's exactly what you said for the new Star Wars movie.
Well, I know, but that it's kind of one of those things that's funny. Universally true.
Yeah. No. No, I agree. No, I just thought it was funny. You're just comparing Bill and Ted with Star Wars in a way.
Oh, well, I'm not trying to compare the two, but it is one of those things that is universally true. If they do it right, it will be good. However, I think that in the way that they can do it right with this one is to acknowledge, is to truly acknowledge that nothing has changed. You have these two guys who are rock and roll dudes who save the future or what have you through their music. But at their heart, that doesn't mean they have to have changed. So I think it would actually be really cool if they are the exact same characters, but here they are in their mid-40s. So now their excellent adventure or whatever gets to acknowledge the fact that you guys haven't changed at all in almost 25 years or what have you. That's why I say I believe that, again, just like anything else, including Star Wars, if it's done right, it'll be well. But I really think that in this particular instance, letting the characters be exactly like they were in 1991, but the age they are today, will probably make this movie. Is that a little bit more...
Yeah.
Not I comparing approve. Bill and Ted to Star Wars?
But kind of doing so?
Exactly. So the next thing that I have... This comes from TechDirt.com. Now, what we have, and I love the byline for this article, from the This Isn't Helping department, Warner Brothers, MGM, Universal collectively pull nearly 2,000 films from Netflix to further fragment the online movie market. Now, what's going on here is Warner is saying, oh, we're not doing this to make Netflix mad or anything. We're just doing this because our, you know, the contracts are running out. They've already run their course, and we've actually launched an online archive of our own, and it's called the Warner Brothers Instant Archive. The problem is that nobody wants to pay $7 here, $8 here, $12 here for the movies that they were already getting when they were paying $8 with Netflix. Now, I'm not saying that companies don't have a right to try and make money for themselves or to try and negotiate a better deal. But the problem is that you're literally, in this case, you're cutting off your nose to spite your face. Here you have a tried and true method. Netflix is paying you money in royalties for movies, whether or not they're watched. So why would you go and have this huge expenditure of creating, granted, it's more or less a one-time thing in terms of setting up servers and dedicating web traffic and what have you, but why would you go through all that time and effort to do the exact same thing and just hope somebody watches your movies anyway? Because they're going to have to subscribe to your service. Meanwhile, they're already subscribing to Netflix, and Netflix is paying you to do nothing but sit there and collect money. So that's just for Warner Brothers. Forget the fact that MGM and Universal are also in on this thing. And it just seems to me that To go back to Star Wars yet again, it's just like when Leia tells Grand Moff Tarkin, okay, or Tarvin, or whatever the hell his name is, the tighter you try and hold on to the grasp, the more star systems slip through your fingers. It's the same freaking thing here. They keep desperately trying to hold on to this outdated model of come to the movies because we say so, and buy our DVDs or our media because we say so. And then they keep making it harder for the people who actually want to do it the right way to do so, to the point where they don't care anymore, and they're just going to go and do the thing you don't want them to do, which is pirate. I don't know. I'm not the only person who thinks this way, or am I?
I think it's because the studios want the control, you know?
I don't know. Did you ever see Extras on HBO?
Yeah, with Ricky Gervais.
Yes, okay. Do you remember... Did you watch the whole series?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you remember, literally, it was the second to last episode or the last episode? Ricky is at a crossroads. He's sitting down at the table with his agent, and he's bemoaning the fact that he can't have it all. He's getting these ridiculous parts for money, but he's not getting any respect. And the agent says, the respect comes with time, by doing good work. If you're not willing to put in the good work, then you have to choose. Do you want the respectable parts, or do you want the money? And he just looks off, which is more or less at the camera, and he says, give me the money. That's what Hollywood wants. They just want the money. Fuck the control. If they had the money, they could get more control because then they could develop the processes going forward. But here, they're just trying... It just doesn't make sense. I don't understand. It's like DRM in video games. Why?
I don't know.
I feel like it's circular logic. So please jump in.
I agree with you. However, I don't think it's all movie studios are like that because it's not always all about the money. I think with certain instances it is, and I think with dealing with Netflix, a studio. A company has to give up a portion of their rights to Netflix. They kind of handle the percentages of money. I mean, that's how they have to make their own money. And, you know, of course, the studio has to get a cut of whatever percentage that we watch on Netflix.
I don't know. It seems to me that you can have, in this particular instance, you can have your cake and eat it too. Because I don't know what's all necessarily listed in the rights, per se, of the movies and how they work for streaming. But it seems to me that basically Netflix says, listen, we have the digital file. We would like to pay you, I don't know, 20% or 20 cents or what have you every time somebody plays this movie. And to which Warner Brothers says, okay, because otherwise no one's going to pay me anything. Yeah. It is what it is. I think these guys are just idiots. I do think it has to do with control, but it would seem to me that the money... It's a corporation. I'm looking at this from the idea of a soulless corporation. In this particular instance, I would prefer them to be soulless than soulful. Just take the money and run, and let people enjoy your product. Because the people who are going to enjoy your product are going to go out and give you more money for stuff that you have the ability to control. Which is the production of... film.
This kind of goes with what I'm going to be talking about in my portion of the news, but you have people that do torrent stuff, or they even use Spotify. Spotify is becoming the next alternative to pirating music. And you go on there and you listen to music, you create your own playlist, you can listen to full albums, and in between 3-4 songs you have to listen to a 30-second ad, which is not a big deal. But every song you listen to, the artist gets money back. And the idea is that in a lot of artists, musical artists, are against Spotify for the same reason they were against iTunes. Maybe a little bit different, because I guess with iTunes, a lot of artists were complaining that people were only buying individual songs, and they wanted their albums to be heard from front to back, I guess, of an album. But then again, you look at quality. You look at the really shitty music of today, and how many... artists actually have an entire album that is worthy of listening to. Therefore, they're more apt to say, oh, you know what, I'll let my music go on iTunes freely. They can just download whatever, pick and choose whatever they want to listen to. But with Spotify, anybody can do it, and they get a portion of whatever the rights are to the money, of whoever listens to the listenings, I guess. But however, for the audience, if you like that music, you still have the ability to go and buy the product, if it's good. So, I don't know if with some of these bigwig corporate guys, or studio guys, studio executives, maybe they know that some of their product might be horrible, and a lot of people won't buy it unless they hold all the rights to it. They get to control who sees it and how they see it, so they can reap all the benefits that they can, because... a lot of people won't go out and buy the movie if they just watch it on Netflix, for example.
Gotcha. Well, I guess it's one of those first world problems for us, indeed. Moving along, though, from JoeBlow.com, we have some interesting movie news. This is a little bit old at this point, but that's okay. Most people may not have heard about this yet. Turns out that a couple weeks ago, the film rights to Daredevil reverted back to Marvel Studios. And there was much rejoicing. And I guess that's true. I don't know. I was one of those people to go with us, I'm the only one that liked it segment. I liked Daredevil. It wasn't a perfect movie by any stretch of the imagination, but it was not as bad as a lot of people make it out to be for me.
I liked it too. Thoroughly enjoyed that movie.
So, yeah. But what we have now is that it turns out that apparently EW learned and confirmed with Marvel Studios production president Kevin Feige that the film rights to The Punisher, Blade, and Ghost Rider have been returned to Marvel. So,
a better Ghost Rider movie? Or finally a Ghost Rider movie?
Well, I thought the first one was pretty good. I did not see the second one because it looked so bad that I didn't think there was a way to redeem it. So I have not seen the second one. The first one was, again, it was okay. I watched it once. When I did see it, I think I saw it in the drive-in or something. So I took it for the $2.50 I paid to watch it or whatever it was. So I would be really excited to see all of these characters come back and get some decent treatment. So that's good news. Good news, good news. Hopefully we'll see some awesome stuff coming from there. Two more pieces here. Recently, a couple of weeks ago, Zach Braff from Scrubs fame and Garden State, he decided to do a Kickstarter. Now, he wants to do his own artistic vision for his newest movie, and so he wanted to raise the funds to do this movie independently. And I read the Kickstarter that he did because I saw, I'd read about it on Reddit, so I clicked the link, went over there and checked it out. And it made sense at the time. I was like, oh, well, that's cool, you know, if he wants to try and do it. But the thought struck me was like, man, he must be on hard times if he's looking. I think I want to say it was like $2 million, so not in the movie world a pittance for a budget, but still, that's more money than most people are gonna see. And I'm like, he must be on really tough times if even he can't afford $2 million. He can't front $2 million because he doesn't say that this money would be in conjunction with any other money. He's saying this is essentially the whole budget. And he was getting lots of positive buzz from most moviegoers and Zach Braff fans. But then the other side came in. And this other side consisted of actors and directors, people in the studio system, who were upset with Zach Braff. And I think that Ken Levine, from his own blog, By Ken Levine, really puts it into perspective. This is a great article. It is from today, Tuesday, May 7th. And he titles it, I Won't Give Zach Braff One Dime. And he starts it off by saying this. Zach Braff is trying to raise money on Kickstarter to fund a movie he wants to make. Zach Braff is a good actor and a fine filmmaker. Garden State was a terrific movie. But I wouldn't give him a dime. Why? Because it defeats the whole purpose of Kickstarter. And he's right. He goes on to talk about how the idea of Kickstarter is allowing filmmakers who don't have any access to the studio system to reach out to the public and create a fan base and create investors, more or less, to fund the projects. And then if the project gets picked up and it becomes the next My Big Fat Greek Wedding, well then, hurrah for the filmmakers and what a way to use crowdsourcing. That's great. But here you have someone who has access to the studio system, has his own money, and is trying to take money from other people who don't get anything out of it other than saying, I gave Zach Braff money. Because let's say that this does turn into the next My Big Fat Greek Wedding, and it makes $300 million on its $2 million budget. Who gets that money? If you donated $1,000 via Kickstarter, do you get any of that money? No. Zach Braff gets all that money. And so you have these dynamics that take place, and I thought that this guy definitely goes over. He doesn't hold it against Zach Braff for wanting to do the right thing. He just holds it against him for going about it the wrong way. And he uses Kevin Smith as an example. He says that because of people like Zach Braff doing this, and he also quotes the Veronica Mars movie. He says, quote, recently Kickstarter was used to fund a new Veronica Mars movie. This is obscene to me. It's a known television series distributed by a major studio. Are you a big fan of Veronica Mars? Want to support it? Great. Buy 10 tickets and see the movie 10 times. So he goes on about how the Sundance Film Festival used to be about marketing small films, about getting the Kevin Smiths of the world to be exposed to the studio system, whereas now it's all about just big budget people coming in with all of their projects, whether or not they're major, they're backed by a studio or not, and it once again has pushed out the little guy. I definitely would say if you get a chance, head on over to kenlevine.blogspot.com and check out the I Won't Give Zach Braff One Dime article. It's very well written. He doesn't hate on Zach Braff as a filmmaker or that he's going to just trash the movie. He says, quote, "Zach Braff can find his money elsewhere. He did once before. He'll make his movie. And if it's half as good as Garden State, I will praise it to the heavens in this blog and urge you to go spend your money to check it out." End quote. So this is not about hating on Zach Braff or what he's doing, just the way he's going on about it. And I agree with it wholeheartedly.
I'm sure they're putting up their own money too, because most of the money goes to publicity. So,
well, there is that, but a lot of it, and here's where Zach Braff's coming from. Zach Braff wants to go away from the studio system. And again, and I'm paraphrasing from what I can remember of his Kickstarter. I didn't pull it up for the show. Essentially, he's trying to preserve Final Cut, and that's why he's using Kickstarter. He admits that he could go to the studio system, but he would have to give up too much artistic control. I have a sneaking suspicion that with the Veronica Mars thing, they probably could have done that as well, but they just don't want to give up that kind of artistic control. And in that, and quite frankly, I think that people with that level of money, even if it's just scraping together $1 million or $1.5 million amongst friends because you don't have $5 million to front yourself for production costs, I think that if you have a business plan in that sense, you might even be able to go to a bank and just finance against a bank and say, I'm going to put up half. I've got $2 million, or I've got $1.5 million. I would like $1.5 million.
Or they can do what Quentin Tarantino tells film students, that don't waste your money on film school. Take all the money that you would have had to put into film school and put it towards a movie.
Right.
Because if you're as good as you think you are, this film will succeed, or it'll get noticed, or I will notice it and distribute it or help you, you know.
Yeah, it's like, to quote Quentin Tarantino, I didn't go to film school, I went to films. And I like
that.
There
you go. That's the best way, I think, to learn about filmmaking is by watching movies.
I think so. I really, truly do. I mean,
I learn more from watching movies than what I learned at film school. Completely. I will be the first one to say that. I mean, yeah, I learned some more of the technical jargon, but when it comes down to making a good movie, it's...
Sure. And hey, here we are doing a show about movies. And why?
Yeah,
because
exactly.
We've watched tons of movies. But we have but one thing left for me. And it's a bit sad, and this broke just today. Visual effects icon Ray Harryhausen has passed away. And he was 92?
Two.
Yes, 92.
Yeah, 92.
He was 92. And this is a guy who pioneered special effects, primarily through stop motion animation. And he is still revered for his work, even though it looks very simple to us today. In its day, it was fantastic, but even looking back on it, you can see how colorful it was and how it sparked the imagination. Even as a kid, I would watch the Tales of Sinbad, or I would watch the original
Jason
Clash of the Titans.
Yeah.
And see how all this stuff, and be like, wow, I wish, even though I was a 10-year-old kid, I could tell it was fake, but it was still, wow, these guys are fighting dinosaurs, or wow, this guy's going up against a Medusa head, and it was just really neat stuff to watch.
The guy fighting the skeletons, that was always
good. Oh yeah, the fighting skeletons. This is a person who was so revered that he inspired people like George Lucas. Okay, he was also friends with people like Ray Bradbury. This is a man who was so influential in the way people look at monsters that he has a restaurant named after him in the movie Monsters, Inc. This ought to tell you just how amazing this guy was. And it was really kind of sad that he passed away. We've definitely lost a great hero. And
yeah, we wouldn't have had Peter Jackson. We would not have had Lord of the Rings or, you know, like Jurassic Park without this guy.
Yes, absolutely. It's just one of those... Well, it's one of those sad things. So if you get a chance, go check out a movie like Oh, the beast from 20,000 fathoms. Or perhaps it came from beneath the sea. Jason and the Argonauts is another one. The Clash of the Titans. Check those, if you get a chance, check them out. You'll really get a glimpse of the history of special effects. And I would like to close with one quote that he gave in 1998. This is from the MSN article, MSN Entertainment from Movie News. He said back in 1998, quote, "I find it rather amusing to sit through the on-screen credits today, seeing the names of 200 people doing what I once did by myself." And that is my news.
Shit. To follow that. Look, I only have two news pieces now.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to ruin your news.
You know, maybe I wanted to end my Ray Harryhausen piece with a sweet tearjerker of a quote like the one you did.
Well, he said other stuff too. I can pull up my article and we can compare it for you.
No, I don't want your seconds. I don't want your leftovers. A pox on thee, sir.
Oh, fine.
Okay, I'm over it. All right, so moving on to my news, I have BitTorrent news, actually. The way movie studios, especially indie movie studios, are promoting movies is evolving. You have pirating, as what we were talking about a little while ago. We have Netflix. We have Netflix original content, as well as Amazon. Amazon. You used to only buy stuff there. Now you can watch their own Amazon-produced shows. It's ridiculous. It's crazy. So all these studios, especially independent movie studios, have to keep finding new and inventive ways to, you know, get people on board with their flicks. Why not use the same technologies that people are using to illegally watch their movies, like BitTorrent? Now, BitTorrent has 170 million users. So Hollywood, in particular, Cinedigm, you kind of sound a little drunk whenever you say this name of this entertainment company, who is a leader in digital cinema. Again, their name is Cinedigm. Cinedigm.
Something like that.
But they're turning to BitTorrent to promote their movie. It's Colin Firth film, Arthur Newman, which actually came out a couple weeks ago. So I guess this is kind of old news, but it's news that I think it is changing movie history as we look upon it. Now, this is a quote from Los Angeles Times saying that this isn't technology against content creators. It's an example of technology and content creators working together to figure out how we can help both of our businesses grow. Well, I don't know if that's necessarily meaning to help BitTorrent grow. I mean, maybe to help BitTorrent evolve from just being a pirating social media website, but to be something much more than that. But what they did with Arthur Newman, what Cinedigm did with Arthur Newman, is that they showed, or they leaked, or they made available the first 7 minutes of the movie for these people to watch, to download and watch. Given the type of people that use BitTorrent, or Pirate Bay, people that I've come across, some of them can't afford to go to movies. Some of them aren't really into certain movies, especially movies like Arthur Newman. I don't know. But it's very interesting. Like, this must be an action-packed, hysterical, exciting 7 minutes of this movie. I mean, this has got to be the most exciting movie ever at the beginning to draw these people in. No, I kid. But, I mean, it's a very interesting concept to be doing something like this. And I believe even with the movie The Comedy, they made the first 5 minutes or so available for people to download, again, as a way of promotion, of self-promoting the movie. Especially, it's not a bad way to delve into the BitTorrent community, or the torrenting community in that matter, to do something like this. Especially given that this movie isn't a big blockbuster movie, so it really needs a number of people to come and see the movie. And what's also good is that this exposes, I don't want to say this movie is an artsy movie, but it's a drama, phenomenal acting, I'm sure, Colin Firth and Emily Blunt, to people that otherwise probably wouldn't really care to go and see the movie at the movie theater. You know, it's a cool concept. What do you think about that, Matt?
Yes, this is one of those things that I believe, where if you just embrace the technology, I'm not saying give away the farm, but do things like this. Take these movies that people may not know and just say, here, check it out. We want you to have it. I would encourage them to do more, especially with movies like this. I would encourage them to do more than just 7 minutes. I'd say like 15. Give them a really good one of their, not the most pivotal scene, but like just a really big scene that can help carry the movie, that really can convey the idea of the movie, and put it out there. I applaud them. They're trying to give people what they want so that they'll be more encouraged to do it the way that the studio wants, that the way these filmmakers want. They don't want to do the movie for free. They want to make money. They'd like to get paid. Studio wants to make money too. But in this way, they say, look, here, take it, download it, give it to everybody, tell everybody what's going on, so that people will then be excited to hear about it and talk about it with their friends and then share it with other people and say, hey, let's go to the movies. Very similar to how the bootlegs worked back in the 60s and the early 70s. Look at the Grateful Dead. Grateful Dead highly encouraged people to get anything, any live bootleg possible, and just get it out there, get it to their friends. Because what that did was it increased the traffic coming to concerts, which increased merchandise sales, and then people went and talked about it. And as soon as a record dropped, they went and got the record. It's the same thing here. I think this is a great idea. Let them work with BitTorrent, because if BitTorrent is working with them, then other studios will be less afraid of BitTorrent, and it will increase BitTorrent's traffic overall, and could possibly help lead to support, financial support from the studios, from the system, from advertisers, from whatever, and eventually everybody's happy.
Happy.
We're gonna watch Zoolander now.
I know. We let's stop the show right now and just watch Zoolander.
Absolutely, put it in there.
Yes. Okay. So my last bit of news is Iron Man Chinese Edition news, which I'm gonna apologize to the two people that listen to the show. I'm kidding. I guess I made a big deal about Iron Man 3 doing this whole, you know, a Chinese version of the movie, you know, how they have to cater to the Chinese for the money to make it more appealing to the market over there. However, with saying that, and after Iron Man 3 finally got released and people went overseas to go see it, and this is from Collider.com, and this is kind of like their title of this article, and it's Iron Man 3's Chinese-only scenes amount to 4 minutes of throwaway characters and product placement. By Chihuahua. I mean, I was expecting there to be at least, you know, maybe 10 minutes of additional material. Anyways, I'm going to go read through these like key points from this article. One of the key points is that when audience took their seats for the film, they were greeted with the following question. What does Iron Man rely on to revitalize his energy? The answer? Gui Li Duo. The first of multiple blatant product placements in the film is for milk drink, which is available for less than $1 a carton in convenience stores across mainland China. Point 2. Connected to that particular product is a character named Dr. Wu, who is seen consuming a carton of Gui Li Duo. Point 3. Gui Li Duo. Apparently, Sir Ben Kingsley's character, the Mandarin, has been changed enough for the Chinese version as to avoid any potential derogatory insinuations towards Chinese people. Point 4. Dr. Wu also appears while having a telephone conversation in Chinese from his office in Beijing, while the television behind him shows Iron Man being cheered by school children in one of the capital's landmarks. Point 5. Dr. Wu has one more scene towards the end of the film, having a short conversation with his unnamed assistant played by Fan Bing Bong. Or Fan. Played by Fan Bing Bing. Bing Bong. Yikes. I'm again. We have a lot of people from Asia that listen to the show, too. I don't want to offend them. Other Chinese-only branding in this extra footage includes shots of Zoom Lion. God, I don't read Chinese. Zoom Lion. Zoom Lion! A heavy industry company in China. and some TV sets and mobile phones made by Chinese manufacturer TCL. And that's along with the Red Bull that I think the Mandarin drinks throughout the movie. But Zoom Milan,
Guli Duo!
Trying to sound angry whenever I push these products. Chinese products wouldn't work in America because they don't sound angry enough or forced enough. But anyways, that wraps up my news. My very inconsistent news. See, I mean, this is when I would have gone into the Ray Harryhausen bit and would have made
and
up
I took
for
it
the
away
past
from you?
10 minutes. The past 10 minutes of me talking.
Oh, I'm sorry. And when I say I'm sorry, I mean I'm not. How about we move on to Three Squared then?
Fine.
Woo!
Three Squared!
Let's do Three Squared. Okay, so this Three Squared was kind of fun. We got our wires crossed a little bit, so this is going to be really interesting because I wanted just... The movie didn't have to be bad. It could be good or bad. But we just wanted... The idea was to find the three, in your opinion, the three worst supporting type characters that you could find. And I happened to find mine from some pretty bad movies, but Tim found them from good movies. So I guess we'll just go ahead and start off with me since I'm already talking here. And mine are as follows. Number three, and this is from worst to absolute worst. There is no way to go here but just down. So in the number three spot, Eddie Murphy in the movie Norbit with his character. He played three characters. He played Norbit, Rasputia Lattimore, and Mr. Wong. And let's face it here, his character of Rasputia being the morbidly obese sexual domination chick. Whew, not good. That just, most people might have laughed, but I have a feeling it was just awkward laughter. It was polite, awkward laughter.
Originally, I thought that, you know, it was good movies with crappy characters. So I thought for a moment you actually really liked the movie Norbit.
No. I was just, that's why I'd said last week, it doesn't have to be a good movie, but if it was a good movie for you, then that's fine. I just happened to find my characters from movies. Sadly, I have to admit to having seen these movies, so that's kind of a downer. But, yeah, so the next one is number two. And this is going to go to Lindsay Lohan for her dual role of Aubrey Fleming and Dakota Moss in the iconic I Know Who Killed Me, which when I first heard about this movie, I actually thought it was a parody of I Know What You Did Last Summer, but it's not. This girl plays twins separated at birth who go through horrible experiences to more or less find one another. And she's just bad. She's actually the lead, but she's so bad, she's her own supporting character, and she sucks anyway. So this was kind of the movie that ended her career as we know it. I'm pretty sure there are stupid people out there who say that marijuana is a gateway drug. No. Acting in the movie I Know Who Killed Me was probably a gateway drug. That's what I think there.
Watching the movie I Knew Who Killed Me is a gateway drug.
Yes. Yes. I don't know how that's possible, but if you look at Lindsay Lohan today, I think I've got scientific proof. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, watch her pole dance and just like crack cocaine and meth just pop in your head.
Exactly.
I gotta do it.
My final pick, okay, and this one I truly, because I just couldn't choose between the two, quote, leads of this movie. So I am doing the entire supporting cast of the film From Justin to Kelly, a 2003 American romantic comedy musical film. That's right. That's the problem. That's half the problem right there. Romantic comedy musical film. And this was basically when people didn't... Basically, Fox had no idea how to capitalize on this. It was the first year of American Idol here. They basically just kind of went a little bit crazy. I think the head of Fox was having sex with the head of 19 Entertainment, and they were snorting coke off a hooker's ass, and they came up with the idea for this movie, and they said, go with it, people will buy it. And this movie is terrible. It is the worst movie. I honestly cannot think of a worse film that I have seen. It's just literally that bad. And I can't choose between Kelly Clarkson and Justin Guarini on this because they're the leads and this is supposed to be supporting people. So I am doing just right down the middle. Just right down the line. Anybody who was supporting you, you're now on the list of the worst things ever for supporting people. And that's my list. The entire supporting cast from Justin and Kelly, as well as Eddie Murphy and Norbit and Lindsay Lohan in I Know Who Killed Me.
If this says anything, if not all of them, but at least two of them, were at least nominated for Razzie Awards.
I know that it's got an 8%
rating. Justin to Kelly? Why'd you even watch From Justin to Kelly?
I'm sorry?
Why? Why did you watch From Justin to Kelly?
Ah, my wife.
I mean, it better be your kids.
No, my wife.
Why would your wife want to watch From Justin to
Kelly? She was an American Idol freak. Like, I'll freely admit, I was living in Seattle when they did the auditions for American Idol the first time around, and so I had loosely heard about it and everything, and then when the TV show came out, I was kind of like, oh, this is kind of interesting. So I bought into the hype for the TV show, okay? And then the show was over, and I was like, okay, that's kind of neat. And I thought at the time Justin should have won, but hey, Kelly was good, whatever, fine. And then this movie came, and I'm like, really? They did a movie? That's terrible. And Jen was like, oh, we gotta see it. And I'm like, I'm not going to watch this movie. There's just no way you're going to drag me to this movie. And she did not. What happened was like 4 weeks later, when it had left the studio in shame, they rushed it to the on-demand service. And so she coaxed me into it at home with on-demand.
I like sausages, but I'm not out Heilin' Hitler or anything.
I'm just explaining that's how it happened.
Sausage as in like breakfast sausage. Well, you know what I mean.
No, not please, like, awkwardly explain it more.
Like, you know, the round, meaty kind.
Awesome.
Cylindrical. Form.
So there you go. I gave you mine. What, go for it, sir. Lay it on us. What are your picks for the Three Squared this week?
Well, since Matt chose three of the worst goddamn movies of all time, I chose three movies that, if not my childhood favorites or movies that I loved as a child, but at least three movies that we all have at one time enjoyed and maybe still enjoy, if not even as a guilty pleasure. Now, my first one is a sequel. Actually, two of these are sequels. But the first sequel is Conan the Destroyer, the sequel to Conan the Barbarian with Arnold. Whereas the first Conan movie, Conan the Barbarian, he's going out to avenge his parents' death, trying to find the wizard or sorcerer or whatever the hell it was that killed his parents. The sequel is where Conan the Destroyer, I guess he's king, and he has to find a captured princess. However, but along this way, he has with him this really annoying helper, his sidekick in a way, Malik, played by Tracy Walter. And Tracy Walter has been in a lot of movies. I mean, he's definitely one of those guys where you see him and you're like, hey, I don't know his name, but I know him. I've seen him in a number of movies. Character actor, I guess. Oh my goodness, this is an annoying character. I mean, it's amazing when you have a really good first movie and you have a really good second movie. It's like they have the second movie all set up. They have the art design. They actually filmed the entire movie, but they went back and reshot scenes specifically so they can throw in this character. Because the movie is just so good that this guy ruins it. and maybe kind of ruins it, but he really ruins it, but he kind of ruins it, because the movie's still amazing, but the movie sucks. It's weird, you know, it's like the movie is going to be in constant limbo for me because of this character, because he's like that, the classic 80s, early 90s buddy side character who's supposed to help the main character out, or be the guy where he's always goofing around, and it's kind of like, oh, Malik, you stupid friend, how dare you fall down into that hole, type of thing. So he's always getting pushed away, but at the very end, he does something heroic. I mean, that's in so many movies. And in so many movies, it's horrible. It's still bad. But yeah, I mean, every once in a while, you get a good one. But it's always bad. Usually it's bad. And in this movie, it's really bad. Now, in my second sequel, this same exact thing happens. Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, with Kate Capshaw and her obnoxious, annoying, absurdly stupid Willie Scott. Now, even with the movie's amazing opening with Anything Goes, where she's beautiful and singing, very pretty dress, gorgeous woman, but my God, she turns into like a stereotype of a woman right off the bat. Very materialistic, which, if it's played right, can be funny. I mean, I'm not saying that the idea of this woman being a, you know, playing a very whiny, materialistic woman's a bad thing, because it's a hysterical contrast to what Indiana Jones is. He's a, you know, big, muscular, adventurer, manly type of man. So, you know, last thing he wants is a very materialistic, whiny woman to keep him from doing what he needs to do and to succeed doing that. I mean, they are in horrific danger. I mean, there comes to this parts of this movie where they're creeping around and they're spying on people, and she freaks out because of a bug, or she breaks a nail, or she can't hold a gun or shoot a gun because it burns her. I mean, it just gets ridiculous and repetitive towards like, oh, you know, Willie Scott's gonna F up somehow because, you know what, she's a woman. That's kind of what it comes to, and I just hate that feeling of having to go along that thought process, if what I'm saying makes sense, but it's just annoying. I mean, the kid kind of worked, because the kid was Asian, and we're laughing at him being Asian in some way, because it's a very stereotypical characters that we're going with, but it's just the whining, and the crying, and the Andy! It's that whiny scream she does. Holy Christ balls. That gets me every time I watch. I specifically don't watch that. I mute it during specific parts of the movie. I just wish they can just edit that movie. Just edit her out. Or CGI her out. But however, Kate Capshaw got into the movie because she caught the eye of Steven Spielberg, to where they lived happily ever after and made babies and all that stuff. Okay, so my third movie was a tie. The other one was Live and Let Die, with the really racist hillbilly hick Sheriff Pepper, played by Clifton James. But the one I went with was The Fifth Element, and the character I have a problem with is Chris Tucker's Ruby Rod.
Corbin!
Oi, Chihuahua. I mean, if he was a side character, that would have been one thing, but you see him. I mean, he's constantly throughout the ending of the movie. And he's constantly annoying. The thing with suspense and building suspense in the movie, which I think the last half of the movie really didn't do as much for me as, I guess, the other parts of the movie, is because of that character. Because every time there's a suspenseful moment and the scene's about to play out, it gets interrupted by Chris Tucker's high decibel pitched, whiny, incredibly sexual, clean, shaved looking character. Which, it looks like he has a big dong for a haircut, coming to think about it. Kind of like Vanilla Ice haircut, it being all white, and it looks like a penis donut. But, I don't know, that's just my weird and awkward line of thought. So again, my three movies were Conan the Destroyer, Fifth Element, and The Temple of Doom.
So then, I believe it is time. Oh wait, so next week's Three Squared? What's next week's Three Squared there, Tim?
Now we're gonna, this next week's Three Square is gonna take you back to your childhood. And with it, you will have to ask yourself, what are the most horrific childhood movies and or childhood scenes from movies that you were exposed to years ago? To where maybe you look back on it and you're like, why the hell did I like that? Or why the hell did my parents let me watch that? For example, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. They're on the boat and they're going through that trippy LSD tunnel of mayhem. And creepiness. So yes, three movies that are horrific kids' movies.
All right,
from your past.
Sounds good. So then, I believe it is time for the movies. So, we have three movies this week, yes? Iron Man 3, The Great Gatsby, and God Bless America. Does that sound about right, sir?
That sounds precise.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and start off with The Great Gatsby. Now, this is the third movie adaptation. It's the 1974. There was a 1925? And then like a
1949.
So, I was not a fan of this book. I found the book to be incredibly dull. I get it. Look, I understand. It's a classic. It's a literary genius. It, you know, touches upon lots of different class issues. I get it. That's fine. I'm not trying to say that my opinion is better in this particular instance or that I don't recognize its value. I just didn't like it. It was too slow. These people are arguing over nonsensical crap and people end up dead over it for no fucking reason. The movie for me is just a visual version of this. Mia Farrow's pretty hot. Robert Redford was looking good. He was young then. He's just as dead at the end of the movie.
Spoiler alert, if you don't remember this from
yeah,
high school.
Yeah, if you didn't find out about this in high school, or if you didn't know about this in the 90 fucking years since the book's been out, sorry.
I like your review of this movie so far. Mia Farrow was hot. Robert Redford looked good. Continue.
I will say this is one of the most faithful adaptations. Because, let's face it, you really can't change this book without destroying it. They did some, I don't want to say necessarily cosmetic, but a couple of logistical changes that you can nitpick if you want. But this movie plays out pretty much like the book. And, yeah, it's slow. I'm sorry, this movie is slow. And it's kind of pretty to look at. Again, the actors look good. I'm sorry, it was slow. It's so slow. The only reason I'm even remotely interested in seeing this, the new version of The Great Gatsby, is because it looks to be very similar in tone to Moulin Rouge and Fine, Shoot Me. I like that movie. I realize it's not a musical this time or whatever, but I just, yeah. So we'll see how it goes. What did you think of this movie? I'm sorry, I didn't like the book. The movie's better than the book. Because it's visual, and I like to read, but I think it helped that I didn't have to go on pointless dialogue and pointless description, so I could just kind of see it, so that helped. But yeah, just a slow movie or a slow book, I didn't like either.
I love The Great Gatsby. I love the storyline. I love the objects within this movie that aren't just objects, they're symbols. There you go, the symbols within the story, within the book especially. And as what Matt was saying, this movie is best representation of the book in film form. I mean, one of the best criticisms of this movie is that it did a wonderful job at following the book. I mean, that's why it's 2 hours and 22 minutes long. And I will admit, the last 20 minutes of this movie, when I went back to rewatch, and I haven't seen it in 10 years, but I rewatched again last night, the last 25, 30, 35 minutes of the movie had a hard time getting through. But before all that, I thought the movie was fantastic. The colors, the look of it, how the time period was portrayed. Well, I can't say that they did it exactly how it was, because I wasn't around in the roaring 20s. But some of the criticism for the movie, negative criticism, was that though the movie, Great Gatsby, portrayed the book well, it didn't portray the careless feeling of the 1920s. However, when you have people in the movie showing people, everyday, ordinary people, more people had money at that time than the decade following, definitely, partying till the sun came up, virtually, dancing around in a cramped, crowded room, sweating all over everybody, just having a good time, and not having a care in the world at all. I think that in itself was just a fantastic representation of that time period. I mean, I'm not too sure what else they could have done. I mean, I'm pretty sure that the new movie will go beyond the call of visually showing what this movie got lauded for. But with saying that, this is a good movie. I thought this was a good movie. I thought these were great characters, great performances of these characters. One thing about Robert Redford is that Robert Redford portrays Jay Gatsby as a human being. And that's what I love about it. all of these characters are human beings. Now, I haven't seen the new Great Gatsby. I've seen some clips. But what I'm afraid of with the new one is that, like Leonardo DiCaprio and Tobey Maguire, that they're going to portray their characters as Jay Gatsby and Nick Carraway as characters, as really good or fantastic characters. Robert Redford, Mia Farrow, everyone else, Bruce Dern, portrays their characters as really good people, as human beings. And that's what I loved it. There's so many nitpicky things about this movie visually and within the characters that I love that you don't really see a whole lot anymore. I mean, it's a very classic movie. Slow moving, yes, but it has a great tone to it. It has a lot of depth to it within the story, within the characters. I mean, even with people that own the gas station and they have that sign, the optical sign with the guy with the glasses, and how that's supposed to be a representation of God, just looking at them and judging him and watching him. And, you know, it just, the movie gets deep when you sit down and you actually dissect it. However, you probably wouldn't have guessed that if you didn't read the book. So, I'm so partial to this movie. It's just a good movie. But with saying that, of course, last 20 minutes, 25, 35 minutes of the movie, I did have a hard time getting through it. But it's well worth it, I think. Especially for movie watching, or especially if you even really like the book, then you'd probably really like this movie.
I would agree with that. I would definitely agree. If you are a fan of the book, this will be a movie for you.
Right, and I just love how the movie kind of shows the dynamic of the classes between the rich class, the upper class, and the lower classes, with Nick Carraway being the lower class and Jay Gatsby being the upper class.
Very good. Okay, then let us move on to movie number two, God Bless America. Can you see what I'm doing here, people? The movie that you went out and saw, we're making you wait on that one. Yeah, that's right. So we got God Bless America, second film, 2011 dark comedy film. It's directed by Bobcat Goldthwait and stars Joel Murray and Tara Lynn Barr. I stumbled across this a couple weeks ago. I was really impressed with the trailer, and it really looked good. I actually liked Joel Murray from back in the Dharma and Greg days. He was on that show as a supporting cast member there. And so, basically, we have a guy played by Joel Murray. Frank Murdoch is a middle-aged guy, down on his luck, thinks he's going to die, and kind of decides to grab life by the balls and kind of issue poetic justice to all the stupid people of the world, more or less, and meets a crazy-ass teenager along the way.
Batshit crazy, man. Psychotic.
And they kind of team up a la Bonnie and Clyde and drive around and dish out their justice by way of killing everybody. And so it's a big satire about how pop culture and various forms of media do nothing for us. As a matter of fact, they hurt us as a society, as a culture, and they just need to be taken out. And when it relates to pop culture as a whole, it initially does a great job. I don't know if it was... At first, I thought they were just kind of picking on conservatives and conservative ideals, but then towards the middle of the movie, I kind of got the idea that they were satirizing the trope of the media always picking on conservatives, but I'm not really sure. It just... That... Personally, that just kind of seems tired and played out. It's just an easy target kind of thing. The biggest problem that I had with this movie, though, because I was so excited to see this movie, is that anytime it strays away from the pop culture side of what they're against, and it's not, they don't just make fun of conservative stuff beyond pop culture. It's that anytime it's beyond pop culture, it seems that the movie attempts to take itself way too seriously. And it's only fun when it's tongue-in-cheek. And you see, especially in the case of the girl, of the character played by Tara Lynn Barr, she's basically insane. Batshit crazy. And maybe it's just the way she interpreted the character, and it was written as a crazy character, don't get me wrong. But I found myself really hating her by the end of the movie. And whenever it would lighten up, it was really good. When it was attempting to be thought-provoking is when it was trying to take itself too seriously, and it just failed every time, because this is, the subject matter is something that you have to satirize. You can't take it seriously, and you can't look at it seriously by playing it seriously. You have to let it be absurd. You have to let it be ridiculous, and you have to let it play on that ridiculousness. And that's what makes it thought-provoking. because you start to look past that. But the movie falls apart because it tries to do both and ends up failing everywhere. And it didn't help that it also showed all the good parts in the trailer. And then, of course, the ending of the movie just is a complete and utter crap-ass letdown. And I really wanted to like this movie, and I ended up just hating it.
Okay, so the beginning of the movie, you get the idea of what his thought process is with popular culture, with reality TV shows like My Sweet 16, and crying babies keeping him up with stupid parents that don't understand to shut your baby up in the middle of the night, waking up everybody, shut him up. So it does this very visualistic, stylistic way of getting into this guy's mind and showing the audience what his tics are. And as the movie goes on, he starts telling people or explaining to people more things about himself and what he thinks about how his hatred towards popular culture and why. Then he finds out he has an incurable brain tumor. And that's when it clicks in his head, something goes off in his head, to where he wants to go out and shoot people. One of the first person he goes out to shoot is the girl from My Sweet 16. And I think the funniest part of the movie is, you know, has her in the car, handcuffs her to the steering wheel. He's going to light the car on fire. So he pulls out a rag with oil or alcohol on it, sticks the rag into the gas tank, lights it on fire, and it blows out of the car. So he has to go out and get it, and he's fumbling it, and the chick's freaking out, so he just turns around and shoots her in the face. It's absurd. I mean, that was more of like a slapstick scene, and that really got me into the movie. What broke me out of that movie happened about 2 minutes later, or actually 20 seconds later, whenever the Tara Lynn Barr, her character of Roxanne Harmon, the little girl who is his accomplice, comes into the picture. And my problem with her is that you have this guy who's in his 50s, late 40s, early 50s, mature man, who's been around the bush. He knows things. He's seen culture, pop culture, go down the toilet. He's seen, I mean, he's just been around for a long time, a lot longer than this little girl. So whenever he goes on to his tangents of talking about why pop culture sucks, why people who do this are annoying, why these people deserve to die because they're screwing over these people, that's a little bit more believable coming from a grown man, coming from that character. But then when you have a 16, 17-year-old girl, bitchy, loud, psychotic girl, you just can't take her seriously whatsoever. I mean, what the hell does she know? I mean, she doesn't know anything. It's like there's one scene when she starts talking about Alice Cooper, how Alice Cooper, at the time, you know, he meant everything and all. You know, she's as if she lived in that time. I mean, I understand the appreciation, but that sounds more like coming from the older man than from this 15, 16, 17-year-old girl. So when she is there and they're talking about the pop culture aspect or talking about the devolution of culture or of humans, it is annoying as hell. Now, unfortunately, every scene has them giving a lesson, teaching the audience what issue is going on. And that's another issue I have with this movie. It's like every scene is a setup for a teaching. Instead of like finding another inventive way to get their points across, it's obvious that the writer is trying to get these points off to the audience that this is how he feels. And so instead of it naturally coming out and it naturally going through the movie, he touches every single aspect of humanity that annoys him and puts it within the dialogue of these characters. Therefore, that's why you have 50,000 of these scenes, I exaggerate, more like 5 of these scenes, if not more, that's at least 5 or 6 minutes of them bitching and complaining. But at the same time, aren't they becoming the people that they're bitching and complaining about? I mean, I hate people that bitch and complain about people who bitch and complain because they're bitching and complaining. I guess I'm kind of bitching and complaining, but I'm only bitching and complaining because of this movie. And I'm only reviewing this movie. And another scene, when she's talking about, I think it's the girl saying that she hates the writer, Diablo Cody, who wrote Juno. She despises Juno because she promotes that it's okay to have a baby in high school, and doing it with tongue-in-cheek humor and tongue-in-cheek sayings and just basically speaking her mind. But the girl in this movie, Roxanne, is doing the exact same thing. She's being tongue-in-cheek. She's saying these really cornball references that Juno does, or did, in the movie. You know, like, holy balls, or, you know, just like those really catchy, stupid, little goofy anecdotes, I guess. But she's doing the same thing. They're both doing it, more so her than he is. He's just kind of learning more about her. And it seems like his character would get more and more annoyed with her instead of taking her under his wing. Especially when she turns out to be a complete, spoiler alert, a complete fraud at the end of the movie. So what happened to the justification? I mean, she has no justification to be a human being for an audience member to connect with her in any sort of way. Like what Matt said, that the movie has to be absurd for it to work. If it takes itself too seriously, kind of like with Pain and Gain, the movie basically derails itself. It screws itself over. It has a very interesting premise. It has interesting and fascinating messages, which I agree with a number of them, but it doesn't mean you have to cram every single preachy thing into a 1 hour and 45 minute movie. And that's all you have is just dialogue about preaching and bitching and complaining for the most part. So, yeah, this movie, after the 24-25 minute mark, just didn't do anything for me at all.
Awesome. Well, then I guess let us move on to the last movie, the one you've all been waiting for, Iron Man 3. So, it doesn't really matter what we say about this movie, because this is a movie that was made on a budget of $200 million and is already at $711 million, so...
Did they do the Kickstarter program as well?
Yeah, poor Disney had to come in and do a Kickstarter for this. They did a Kickstarter just to cover Don Cheadle's... to cover Guy Pearce's salary, I guess. Okay, so... Iron Man 3 does pick up after the events of The Avengers, so that's an important note. It kind of brings everything full circle from the original Iron Man, which I thought was really good. I have to say that I really enjoyed this movie, and it was very well done. It was great special effects, didn't take itself too seriously. Where it did try to be serious, I think for the most part it succeeded. And it advanced all of the characters' stories. Got a little crazy with Pepper there by the end, but they reined it back in by the credits. So I don't know. I like this movie. It's essentially Tony Stark trying to deal with the fact that he is Iron Man. It's almost like he understands he's no longer worthy to wear the armor. That there truly is more to him in the world than just how he perceives it. And he now wants to make more of his life, but he can't. And just when he thinks that he's going to be able to get a grip on it, out comes the Mandarin. And there is then the balance of trying to save the world while trying to save your own world, but also letting go of the technology that makes you you. And there's a lot of things, there's a lot of issues being juggled with in here, and it's all against the backdrop of the Mandarin, who's trying to take over the world, more or less. And also Guy Pearce plays a billionaire think tank owner who starts off as a weakling but ends up as a badass. And so, you know, that whole segment of it plays itself out. And in the complaint department, that's kind of the only one that I have, because I would have really liked to have seen Sam Rockwell come back to have him reprise his role as Justin Hammer. He's the rival weapons manufacturer who basically kind of helps Ivan out, or whatever is, yeah, Ivan Vanko. And we all know that he gets arrested in the last movie, but I think it would have been really cool for him to come back. But hey, you know, there's other movies to make, so we'll see how it goes. That being said, Guy Pearce does do a good job. I don't want to give too much of it away, because if I go any further, I just, in some aspects, I kind of think he specifically went a little over the top. And that's kind of the only thing that I would have to say was a kind of a drawback. So just minor things, minor little things, but nothing that detracts from the movie as a whole. It was a great movie, but I did kind of, I did find myself over the rest of the evening and the next day kind of saying, but what really made it so great? And I find myself saying, you know what, to describe how good the movie is, it's almost ineffable. That is how I will leave it. A great movie. You should see it. What did you think, sir?
It was entertaining. I liked it a lot better than the sequel. However, I just thought there was too much Tony and too much snarky comments. And I guess it's kind of what he has turned out to be, what Robert Downey Jr., you know, what makes his character famous is his snarky, starky comments.
Snarky, starky. Nice.
But it happens throughout the entire movie. Whenever the movie could get a little serious, which is okay for movies like this, superhero movies, action movies, comedies, to have a realistic human moment to it. And it can last for more than 2 minutes without there being a comedic let-up. And I think that's what really kept this movie from it being an excellent movie. It's just, there was just too much Tony, too much of him goofing around and just always having something to say after somebody says something. And I just couldn't get into the character as I think that the writers or the director wanted me or the audience to get into him, to make him a believable superhero, to make believe in him as a believable human superhero with real people qualities. But again, just how he is, I just couldn't do it. Just kept me, it's like I couldn't go through the wall, man. I couldn't break through that wall, the Starky Tony, snarky wall. But yeah, that's me. I mean, still enjoyed it. That's all I got.
Well, all right then. That'll have to do. So, awesome. Okay. Well, then I think we, for the most part, have agreed on these movies. I think we're going to have to find another Hobo with a Shotgun movie. So
we need to rewatch Hobo with a Shotgun and Rubber.
Yes. Maybe we should just, you know, yeah, do a special episode where we just revisit those two movies so we can continue to argue. Because, you know, this whole kumbaya shit, it's got to go, man.
Maybe, okay, so this is why I think we need to get rid of that. We have one movie to make the other person watch. Because it's a good thing if we know the other person might not like a movie and you force them to do it. Because I miss being right all the time and you being wrong.
Indeed. and when you wake up from that dream and realize that you have been wrong and I have been right. No, I mean, I understand what the problem is, though, is that you gotta balance that, because the whole key is that, see, you've been able to slip in stuff like that movie I watched a couple weeks ago, where had I known what it was about and I would have made you use your one. See, you've been able to sneak in movies that I haven't liked that you did like. We just haven't had anything to really argue about yet. So
true.
What I think is going to end up having to happen is we're going to end up having to exhaust our one, and then we're going to come across another movie, and then at that point we're going to have to kind of re-up the one. I'll tell you what, let's do this. Let's say
one movie a month.
No. Just one at a time. Okay? So if I use my one, I can't make you watch another one until you've made me watch one.
Oh.
And vice versa. If you use your one first, you can't make me watch another one until I've used mine. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then once they're both exhausted, then they get replaced.
Sounds delicious.
This way we can continue our rhetoric of fighting one another, but not have to have this slew of, okay, I'm just going to make you watch everything in a row.
Yeah.
So, okay, good. All right, so there you go, guys. The Battle Royale seems to be building and everything, and I'm sure we'll see how that works out. Let's see here. So I guess it's time for the movies that we're going to be watching next week. Next week's movies are going to be The Great Gatsby. We're going to be watching the 2013 version. And then we got a couple of Netflix ones for you, and we'll have some more movies coming out in the next couple of weeks, because that's when Star Trek's coming out and all that good stuff. So we got The Great Gatsby, and then we have Bellflower and Side by Side. That's right, Great Gatsby 2013 version, Bellflower and Side by Side. So I believe it is time for the spiel, is it not, sir?
Spiel on.
All right. The music you've been listening to, as always, is provided to us and to you by our music partners, Cries of Solace. You can check them out at criesofsolace.com. You can go to reverbnation.com, go into Houston, and then look up Cries of Solace there as well. You can also check them out at myspace.com and facebook.com, /Cries of Solace. As for us, you can check us out at slscast.com. You can go to Facebook as well. Look up SLScast, find us there, like our page. You can send us email to theslscast@gmail.com. And you can follow us on Twitter @theslscast. As well, you can subscribe on iTunes. So until next time, this is Matt saying, what do you say, Tim?
Goodbye.
And there you have it. Peace out, everybody.
Cheers.
Thanks again for listening to the SLS Cast with your hosts, Matt and Tim. Remember that you can find us at slscast.com, at the SLS Cast for Twitter, also on Facebook, and you can always subscribe on iTunes. Thanks again for listening.